North Idaho News of the Week is brought to you in part by Evergreen Realty, commercial and residential property listings. Online at evergreen-realty.com. Good morning. You've tuned in to North Idaho News of the Week. It is Friday, January 3rd, 2025, and you're listening to KRFY. This is Panhandle Community Radio. I'm Jack Peterson, and I'm here with Chris Bessler. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jack. How are you doing here in 2025?
You know, so far, so good, I guess. No complaints yet. No major struggles in the first 2 days. And it looks like I'm starting a successful day three based on my company this morning, where I'm joined by yourself and who else is here, but both the publisher and the editor of the Sandpoint Reader are here. Ben Olson is the publisher of the Sandpoint Reader and Zach Hagedon, the editor. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Jack. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Zach.
Good morning, Jack. Good morning, Chris. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Zach and Ben.
We're here. We've got a lot to talk about. We're hoping to do our best to kind of look back on the big stories of 2024 today. But there is also news, fresh news of the week that we should probably get to right off the bat. The big story in this week's Reader is continuing drama at the Bonner County Commission. The unlawful trespass as of Rich Kramer and Dave Bowman has apparently come to some sort of final resolution now, with a settlement or a payment to Rick Kramer for $275,000 for unlawful trespass. The event itself took place in January, in January of 2024. And now here we are heading into January of 25. And Rick Kramer has he settled, or he was just offered a payment of $275,000?
It's settled.
Okay, yeah. So that legal drama has come to an end now with those two citizens, and the total payment to Kramer and Bowman comes to $475,000. There's more to discuss there, but I'll also mention that the sheriff's temporary resignation was also a major point of discussion at the last Board of Commissioners meeting. Sheriff Wheeler announced that he was resigning temporarily effective December 13th in order to begin drawing retirement benefits. The commissioners discussed it and made no motions on this arrangement. Wheeler was reelected in November and will be reseated in January, but by resigning on December 13th, he becomes eligible for his state retirement benefits. And so, that's his interpretation of the relevant statutes. There are disagreements among various public officials and local people of interest. So it seems to me like that is an ongoing conversation, that we don't know exactly how that's going to resolve itself, or if this is going to end up in court or what. But the most recent action taking place there is that the county commission discussed it and I believe made no official motions one way or another.
Yeah, there was a motion.
There was a motion.
Yeah, Commissioner Ron Korn made a motion to formally accept Sheriff Wheeler's resignation, but Commissioners Asia Williams and Steve Bradshaw abstained from the vote, which killed it.
Okay.
Because they didn't feel comfortable voting on it, because they, they didn't agree with that interpretation that the board had to act.
Yeah. That, well, we, okay, and well, yeah, let's discuss that more. When last we spoke, because we more or less skipped the Friday after Christmas, Brian Domke had been nominated to sit, or had been, it was proposed by the Bonner County Republican Central Committee that Brian Domke take his, Commissioner Bradshaw's seat effective in December. On December 19th, Domke declined to be seated early, and this was met approvingly by both Commissioner Bradshaw and the Bonner County Republican Central Committee Chairman Scott Herndon. And so that at least seems like it's come to an end, and there won't be a case in court to determine whether or not the Republican Central Committee has that ability. Here in the city of Sandpoint, it seems like relative to the county, things have been pretty quiet. The Russell Sports Complex is open for activity. I can confirm that based on firsthand reporting. I went and visited and found that the building is open. People are actively playing pickleball, and you can even go and play on the playground if you're more of a playground enthusiast. So let's talk again with a little more expertise about what's going on in the county there. Anything more to say about the Domke Bradshaw the question of whether or not Bradshaw could be removed from office before he officially resigned or before his term was slated to be up?
Well, I think the whole thing's moot at this point. I mean, Domke said he didn't want to do it. Bradshaw says he's still here. He's still taking part in meetings. He'll be out of that office on January 13th anyway. So if they were going to try to force anything, it would be, you know, about the definition of quixotic.
Yeah.
I mean, there'd be no reason to do it. So I think we can safely put a pin in that and say, you know, the end on the Steve Bradshaw. Yeah. Is he here? Is he not? Drama.
It seemed like after the governor's the governor's office had basically stated no vacancy exists, that would more or less bring the tale to an end as well. But then more happened after that. The County Republican Central Committee voted, I think, 19-5 or overwhelmingly they voted to seat Domke anyway over the
But he declined, citing his concerns that it would result in litigation more than likely. So I think that was a pretty responsible stance for him to take. And also, why would you want to start your commissioner term under that kind of cloud?
I feel bad for Domke a little bit, because I mean, this is just a Herndon kind of muscle flexing move, and Domke was just kind of thrown along on the bus, and I think it's unfortunate because Scott Herndon is making this big to do about this replacement, and it's frustrating. I mean, if Bradshaw had another year in his term, I might be able to see Herndon somewhere along the way there, but we're talking about a matter of weeks, and it's
at this point days.
And all the talk and the chatter and the infrastructure and the meetings and the things sent to the governor, it's such a waste of motion, and it's frustrating. So I think Domke made a correct move there.
Yeah. I mean, I guess what's interesting, the question remains sort of unsettled, whether the county commission had the right to do this. And so I guess it leaves it open for something that could happen in the future.
The central committee.
Sorry about that. Central committee. Yeah. Whether the central committee can basically find a reason for a sitting county commissioner to be removed from office, without engaging the broader public, or without,
it takes the governor's appointment. Right. So, I mean, it seems like, like an awful lot of noise for something that really they don't have the authority to do anyways.
Yeah. Sound and fury signifying nothing kept coming through my head.
Yeah.
Thinking about that.
That was why the reason that story intrigued me so much was the fact that it was a testing of the waters, I guess, if you will. And the Bonner County Central Republican Central Committee was testing to see, mm-hmm. you know, what exactly can we do here? And when you can have somebody removed or have their seat, you know, declared vacant with no letter of resignation, you know, no crime, no death. It's an interesting turn of events where you have, you know, this unelected person being nominated by a committee based upon what they want. And, you know, the committee may vote on it, but the committee is ultimately lockstep behind its chair.
Yeah. I mean, getting into the most important stories of the year, I want to emphasize what you just said there, which is just that it, in spite of the fact that it would have been almost inconsequential, had it gone through, Domke would have sat for what, one or two extra meetings altogether.
Right. But the precedent would have been set.
Exactly. Had he been set,
Don't toe the line, then we might replace you.
Then you could be, then we'll be analyzing the state code for any possible violation, and we will, you know, we'll make moves to remove you. And it seems like they got a little bit of a, you know, a slap on the wrist here, but the question is still a little bit open. They could try it again if, you know, depending sometime in the future, although the governor seemed to... The governor's lack of response was pretty clear. Let's talk about this Rick Kramer unlawful trespass a little bit. Can you explain how this came about after we talked pretty much at length about the Bowman settlement a few weeks ago? And right. Folks can go back on our website, listen to that podcast from, I think, mid-December. Rick Kramer was the other gentleman who was trespassed from a county commission meeting by the Sandpoint City Police at the request of, at the time, County Commissioner Luke Ahmet. And he is now the recipient of $275,000 for being found to have been unlawfully trespassed from that meeting.
Right. I mean, I don't know how much there is to say more about this. I mean, we've talked about it for a year now. You know, the incident or incidents arose from some emails that were sent to Commissioner Ahmet that he considered to be threatening. And so these individuals, Dave Bowman and Rick Kramer, were asked not to be at the meetings, citing, you know, mm-hmm. Ahmet's interpretation of these emails as being threatening. He performed a citizen's arrest. You know, the Sandpoint Police responded. Both Bowman and Kramer ended up suing the county for, you know, violating their First Amendment rights for, you know, unlawful trespass, et cetera, et cetera. Bowman already got his payout. He had $199,999 for physical injuries, quote unquote, and $1 for the violation of his constitutional and civil rights. We don't know what the breakdown is on Kramer's, if there is a similar kind of breakdown, but we do know that we're looking at close to $500,000 now between these two incidents. So, I guess, bravo to their lawyers, but, you know, too bad for our civil litigation fund.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, there's a phenomenon online of people called First Amendment auditors, and they kind of go around and they film in places that are sensitive, but they have the right to, and they know the code so well, and they follow the code. And it reminds me of this a little bit, where you have this group of unruly, you know, citizens who go to meetings and often grandstand and you know, leave messages to the Bonner County commissioners, which could be perceived as a threat. And it was interesting to me how a commissioner can't actually enforce attendance at the meeting. You can't kick somebody out. According to the settlement, you know, this was this is a settlement. It wasn't gone through the court process, but it's just interesting to me where you have, people who love to go up and, you know, upbraid the commissioners, and here we're paying them almost $500,000.
Mm-hmm. This settlement was made by the county. Did it have to be approved by the county commission? Did the county commission vote to approve this settlement, or is this something that happened through the county attorney's office.
I wouldn't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I know that they had to read a apology letter.
Yeah.
I'm not sure who wrote that, but.
For Bowman, they did, and they did it. They had for to read Kramer again as well. As yeah. well for Kramer. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So hopefully that's the end of that. But, you know, I think that there's probably a precedent set here that's going to be pretty chilling on future commission chairs about how far they can go with, you know, keeping order in their own meetings. Because, I mean, if I was a commissioner and I was the chair of a Montgomery County Commissioner board, I would probably think twice about bouncing somebody from a meeting if – more than likely I was going to get, you know, hit with a $275,000 settlement. So I don't know what that's going to mean for the future.
Well, let's, speaking of the future, let's not, let's not talk about the future right now. I would like to, I mean, this leads naturally right into questions of what is the new dynamic on the Board of Commission look like it's going to be. And I'd like to ask about that, but let's wait until the end of the program to talk about that if we have some time. And right now talk instead about what's been happening this year. Yes, Chris, what do you say?
I say we better move on to the year in review here. That's, because we're going to run out of time.
Let's talk about it. Let's talk about, hold on, let me find my paper here. The Sandpoint Reader had a fine column on the in the Christmas Eve edition, or a fine piece in the Christmas Eve edition from December 24, written by the Reader staff, and
well, it looks Zach, like Zach wrote that.
Zach took the lead on this one. We can't read it word for word because there's some language in here that I don't think we can safely say on the air. The tone's a little more jocular than we tend to.
Zach, what did you write?
I don't remember using any blue language, but you know, it was late at night, and
yeah, you know. There's just a couple, nothing to you know. Anyway, let's I guess let's talk about it. What's your big? Should we just?
I think we should go around the room here and rattle off a few. What we thought were the biggest stories. I think there's probably a lot of agreement on the biggest ones, but yeah. And start with Zach, since he's the guy that wrote the story last week, and then maybe we'll come in and add in anything we saw happening in the year that's worth a mention.
Wow. Okay. So for me,
pressure's on, Zach.
Well, I mean, I spent a lot of time thinking about City Hall.
Yeah.
So I think that for me personally, I think that the City Hall stuff rises to the top, and specifically the wastewater treatment plant. I think that finally getting movement on that project after so many years of talking about it and the size of it. I mean, it's like $100 million plus. And it's one of the most critical things we have going on around here. I mean, it's not sexy to talk about, you know, the poop plant or whatever. But with all the development and growth that we have, it's going to dictate how and where we're able to develop going into the future. And probably is going to be one of the single biggest things that we do in the city for maybe even like a decade or more. And we're finally going to see some of that happen in the year to come. But we also finally saw some movement with some analysis, with some, you know, contacting state and even federal officials about it. And we're on the state's radar now for funding, which we hadn't been before. Mm-hmm. So for me, that was a big one.
So the other things at the city are we had a new mayor come in.
Oh, we had a huge year at the city hall.
New councilors. The city administrator resigned right at the start of the year. Are you seeing a different dynamic in the council and mayor?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, reverting back to that department head structure and away from the city administrator style that we'd had since, 2014, when Jennifer Stapleton came in, has made, I think, the whole administration a lot more nimble. I mean, I feel like they knock these projects out a lot quicker than they used to. I mean, we got the comp plan approved after like 7-8 years or whatever of how long that took to get done. You know, we got the James Russell Center sort of finished, delivered, opened, right when they said they would. We got the new fire department established during the year. So, that, I mean, that's a pretty hefty pile of accomplishments. Granted, a lot of those were teed up, mm-hmm. you know, for this new administration under Mayor Jeremy Grimm. But the fact of the matter is council, staff, and the mayor delivered all those things within, you know, the calendar year, mm-hmm. which is a pretty big deal, and started on stuff like the wastewater treatment plant. We're also going to see, you know, movement toward analysis on downtown revitalization. So expect to see some talk about the streets getting ripped up again. Not this year. it's a couple years until we see dirt turned, but they're going to start talking about it. And there's stuff with parking, there's stuff with development, and
And there's also the stuff that they're not doing, which is, I mean, we all remember the downtown design competition,
right?
You know, tens and tens of thousands of dollars were paid to planners and designers to tell us what we want in our city, which a lot of people took umbrage with. That's just kind of dormant. It's gone away. And it's amazing. It, the culture of you know, Shelby and Jennifer as mayor and city administrator versus, you know, Mayor Grimm and the department heads, I think the culture is let's stop with these vanity projects, these big luxury vanity projects, or at least slow them down and think about them more. And I personally appreciate that. I think things were getting down the line where it was more resume padding than it was community building. And so I'm appreciative of it personally.
I'll throw out one more city thing, and that is the proposed 1% local option tax did not pass. Didn't even come close. It needed a, 60% majority. And I don't think it received a simple majority. So do you anticipate that coming back? Proposing that again?
In my portion of the year in preview, I did predict that they're going to bring that back in some form or another, because I don't think that issue's gone away. I think that's still one of the biggest issues that we face is our crumbling infrastructure. And I know that the mayor and, you know, top level staff, whatever, see this as one of their biggest priorities is to get a handle on our streets and sidewalks. So finding a way to fund that, because we don't have any other way to fund it. That's really the only way that we're going to find to get that amount of money. They have to bring it back. And I also think they're going to bring it back at the same time they try to bring back or try to propose a bond measure in May to raise money for the wastewater treatment plant, which is going to make both of those really hard to get passed by voters.
They're
going
to have a lot of work to do.
If they're going to try to bring back the 1%.
The public about what they're trying to do with that. Yeah.
But I do see both those things happening.
Okay, Ben, give us one.
Just to avoid talking about the county again, I think the gate failure at the Albany Falls Dam was a pretty big story. That happened in the springtime. They did some work on the gates, and they found that there was a structural flaw in the metal. There was a delamination, and you know, the gate was holding, but the experts at the Army Corps of Engineers, they read the writing on the wall. They said, if this gate fails, we have no way of controlling the water level, which means, you know, our lake could essentially empty down to low pool in the middle of summer, and flood events. So there, that was an interesting, issue because it came up right before the summer pool was starting, or, you know, a couple months before, and the Army Corps got ahead of it and told the community, you know, what to expect, and the community largely was, let's just say they were peeved. there was talk about the summer pool being a lot later than usual, about the boating season being curtailed. Ultimately, it came down to the pool reached, or the level reached summer pool about a week after it usually does. So really didn't.
Not a huge impact this year.
No.
But that flaw is still there, and they're having to look at all the gates now, right?
The flaw is still there. And, you know, I went and visited with the Army Corps representatives before that meeting that they had. I believe it was in October. And, you know, they told me, if the flaw is there in one gate, it's probably there in all the gates. You know, these gates were made in the early 50s. This is like post-World War II steel. So it's not the best of steel that was used. And it's also, it's almost 80 years old or so. And it's something that they've announced they're going to replace all the gates eventually. And that's a huge project. It's not something you can just order on, you know, IKEA and have them like bring you some new gates. I mean, these are massive gates and big engineering hurdles. And so they've started the process, and we're going to have more information at an upcoming meeting. But I think we're going to be dealing with this for the next 4 or 5 years, probably. They might be able to get a few gates a year, but we might be under restricted gate movement for the spring and into the summer for the next 4 or 5 years.
That's going to, there's going to be some impact on lake users. Waterfront owners.
Yeah. And it's a shame because I feel like a lot of people understood, you know, it's a safety issue. But there were a lot of people who also just kind of got angry and said, this is why we live here. We want to be on the lake and, you know, fix it. And so I see both sides. I see the frustration with owning lakefront property, not being able to use your boat for, you know, a portion of that period. But, you know, first world problem is the other avenue there. So, yeah, that was a pretty big story. We're going to keep seeing it over the years until it's resolved.
And that meeting is on January 9th.
So, coming right up.
They're going to talk more about it next week. Yeah.
So if you're interested in that issue, put that on your calendar. Jack, give us one.
Oh, boy. Well, obviously, there were the elections, and we can talk about that, both in May and in November were huge. I'd like to talk about that Army surplus store. It's been on my mind lately, because that's that hole remains in the on Fifth Avenue there. There is the Army surplus store burned down on the night of the 4th of July, or after the 4th and into the 5th.
Allegedly an arson.
Yep. Yeah. Alleged arson. And of course, there's
a suspect.
Yeah. Who's been found a couple times to be unfit for trial. So I don't want to speculate too much on the motivation or anything there, but it did leave a literal hole in the city, in the physical city that we live in. And also it seemed like a fluke at the time. And then, it does seem to me like something, the kind of thing we're seeing more and more of across the country, as far as just dramatic, the way that that individual citizens are responding to their discontent seems to be growing a little more violent and dramatic in these days. And we had our own version of that on July 4th here.
We don't have any idea what the motivations were, and we're not going to know until
we really don't know if that was the motivation. But you're right; it certainly leaves a hole there on Fifth Avenue. Right. We already got a couple big holes in our downtown. We got a hole where Arlo's was on Cedar and on First. Yeah. And we have that big hole that right at the corner of First and Bridge that both were fires and have not been replaced for a matter of years in those two cases.
So hopefully
there's some plans to get some of those holes filled up with new buildings that will be productive for our community.
Anyway, that was one. And thank goodness nobody was hurt during that fire either, which certainly could have gone the other way. And this was right after the official Sandpoint Fire Department was founded. I think they were
their first job
inaugurated. Yeah. I think on like the 1st of July, and they were
successful in keeping it from spreading to the next building over too, which is pretty important. Well, I'll tag on with one of mine to what you just said. Actually, a kind of a quick pair there, having to do with stuff going down on downtown. Got a last little bit of one-way street got eliminated from our downtown. Chunk of pine that's between 4th and 5th reverted back to two ways, and there's a new intersection there. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that when we get to summer and there's a ton of traffic, because my office is near there, and I can already see cars starting to stack up during certain times of the day. So it'll be but we can now go both ways, all the way down Pine Street, which is kind of an advantage, I think, for local transit. The other one I wanted to mention in terms of impact on the downtown is that Avril Hospitality's plan to rebuild the Edgewater was approved by the city, and that is going to start in 2025 if they stick to their plan there. And more, it's more than doubling the size of the current hotel there. It's going to include a convention center. Of course, there's a lot of pros and cons. A lot of people hate to see that level of development introduced to our city beach. For the visitor and hospitality industry, there's a plus in that we're going to have a facility that can do shoulder season conventions and meetings. So that will help retailers and restaurants that struggle during those shoulder seasons we have. So, I guess, you know, that's what happens with so-called progress.
Well,
so we lose things and maybe gain things. But it was also interesting to me, the most recent thing, and Zach, you probably reported on this, was the city decided to loosen the parking requirement there.
I didn't actually make it to that.
You didn't make it to that meeting. Okay. Yep.
But I did hear about it.
Yeah, and so they reduced the number of parking spaces right. that Avril needs to provide there, which seems a little counterintuitive to me, given how much parking is needed at the City Beach. And at the same time, Mayor Graham introduced the idea that, reintroduced this idea that we ought to start charging for parking at City Beach, which will be interesting to see in 2025 how that possibly right. pans out if he puts it forward as a real solid proposal, because I think there'd be a lot of local pushback against that.
Well, we haven't had a chance to get into the reporting on that, but we had Mayor Grimm up in our office a little bit before Christmas for a pretty wide-ranging interview. We haven't gotten to all the aspects of what we talked about, but one of the things he mentioned to us as well was to expect at the city parking lot, you know, so at the beach, you know, charging at the beach, but also charging at the city parking lot.
No kidding. Okay.
So there's talk about that. It hasn't really made it out into a public meeting yet, but okay. he told us on the record in our office that we should expect to see a discussion about putting some like automated arms there, perhaps, or some kind of mechanism. They're going to change also the ingress egress at the lot, and then install some kind of payment structure so that they can have a funding stream to fix the thing, for one thing. Mm. But that's probably also going to raise some hackles, because I mean that's where downtown workers park.
Yeah,
that's where I park.
Tourists don't park there by and large. I mean, they do, but
it's the workers.
That's downtown workers that park there. And so I feel like it's a tax on locals, and that's kind of frustrating.
But he talked about dynamic pricing, you know, so during times of high demand, you know, the rate could be $12 an hour. During times when there's nobody there, it could be like $1 a day or something.
It'll
so who knows?
Push the local workers off to the residential streets several blocks away, probably, which the residents won't like on those streets. So it's going to be interesting to see how that pans out. I will mention we're going to have Mayor Graham on the morning show on Wednesday, the 15th, just 2 weeks away. So we'll be asking him about question.
Ask him about the Avril Hotel, too. He referred to that as the Hagedon moment for Sandpoint. No relation.
Yeah.
You know, referring to Coeur d'Alene, you know, when the resort finally developed.
And the eyes of some locals, that's not a particularly great thing.
Even as a Hagedon, no relation. I said, that's probably not a great, great moment.
Yeah. Okay, Zach, give us another one.
Oh, one more.
From your list,
Right.
Cool. Lightning round around the room, because we're already over time here.
Yeah, sure. So I thought that the library stuff was interesting. We may have forgotten about that, but when the legislature was in session, the last legislature, there was the big debate about the harmful materials in the library. And the local folks really rallied, I think, around our library. There was actually like a demonstration, like in support. I mean, it was a pro library demonstration. I thought the discussion that surrounded that was really interesting. It didn't matter ultimately because the legislature passed it and it went into effect. But I felt like that was important because it's going to come up again. We have yet to test any of these laws where, you know, essentially libraries can be sued by parents or guardians or whoever, if they feel like a minor has accessed something that they find harmful under this really sort of broad and subjective definition of what harmful is and obscene. So, yeah, I mean, we haven't had that tested yet, and I wonder if we're going to see that be tested this year. But early, you know, sort of in the spring of 2024, that was a major discussion. Like, we were all freaked out that, you know, it was going to be the end of libraries. Mm-hmm. And that remains to be seen, but this community really showed that it values its libraries, you know, intensely.
And I'll throw in on the library front that we have a new director there.
Right.
Vanessa Velez. And
She's great.
Yeah, and she's great. So hopefully she has a good long tenure there. Ben, give us another one.
I'll buck tradition and I'll be positive here. I'll talk about a few things that were
despite
added.
Despite the
button I'm wearing. The button you're wearing. Too bad it's not TV. You can be colorful when you are on the radio. There were some great additions to our community this year. The Field of Dreams Sports Complex was launched. It's a multi-phase project, but it was a huge, I think, over 20-year effort to get this thing happening. And the city of Ponderay really rallied and made it happen. And, you know, there's more to come. But right now, I was there at the opening. It was there were probably over 1,000 people there. I mean, counting all the kids playing. And it was great. It was a moment. And then, you know, coupling off of that, there's the ice rink that they opened.
The pond.
The pond, mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's right off of Kootenai Cutoff Road, yeah.
And I love the way they did it. I love the spirit of the way the city of Ponderay did it. You know, Kaylee Miller, she was telling me that instead of a $2 million investment, we decided to do the stair-step approach and do a $200,000 investment to see, to let the community prove it. Whether they want it or not. And I like that idea. Instead of throwing so much money at something, whether it's unproven, maybe just give somebody a little amuse-bouche and help have them, you know, okay, I want more of that. Mm. I'll order that. Mm. So I dug
that. There's been a lot of love at that pond already. Right. There's been a lot of skaters there and families having fun. So, yeah, it's a good indication.
And then Carousel Smiles, they found a new home there at the old Bazaar building on 5th and Church. Kinnexu Land Trust had purchased the Pine Street Sled Hill, which is kind of part of their Pine Street Woods.
We just need some snow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Down lower, yeah.
You know, so we have a lot of good things added to the community. Yeah. And I think those all show that we're, despite the drama that happens elsewhere, there are people out there who are still putting their heads down and getting the work done and building things for the people that live here.
Jack, you got one more? That you throw out as a headline of the year?
I mean, I guess the, 2024 was an election year. And we saw that's probably what we mostly talked about on these airwaves, I think. The things going on in our local political scene. Shakeups in May. There was hotly contested Republican primaries in, I think, all the major political races. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think.
In the legislature in particular, the two House seats.
Yeah.
And the Senate seat.
And then November came along, and Idaho and Bonner County and Legislative District 1 all kind of followed the national trend. And actually, I think and then some in our area.
Not a lot of surprises in November, given the results of the primary election, except I did expect the Proposition 1 to be a little closer, and it lost by 70-30 or something like that.
It was dramatic.
It was a big loss for that.
I think it was just I think 4 years ago it might have done better. It may not have won, but I think there was just a general rightward push in the election of 2024, and you see it across the board, nationwide, through the state. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think it was a casualty of that also.
Yeah. That was the Open Primaries Initiative that went down there.
Open Primaries Initiative was particularly interesting because it was not partisan, but it did followed the partisan trends almost exactly, meaning that the people who were opposed to it were listening to, you know.
The Republican establishment, which is firmly in control of most of the state, was way against it, and they prevailed there.
Yeah.
I'll throw out one more myself here. First of all, I think housing is just kind of going along as a problem here. It, in some ways, it doesn't make news, except that the Idaho Capital Sun said that Idaho, Montana surpassed California as the most unaffordable states in the union. That's based on not only the cost of the housing, but the fact that our per capita income is lower. So our net unaffordability is even higher here than it is in California, which is a terrible trend to see. I think we're worse than most of the state, too. So that's kind of a sad thing. And then another news that when something doesn't happen is we had a practically smoke-free summer in autumn this year.
There's good news.
There you go.
It
would be nice if that would continue. So
They're knocking on wood again.
We're way past 8. Do you want to throw out one prediction for the year in the fast lightning round here?
Yeah, your year in preview was interesting. That was on newsstands yesterday morning.
It was an interesting addition all around, I think.
The, you know, look, I guess looking ahead, the county commission new faces, or a, yeah, new county commission coming in on January 13th. Do we have a sense of, the tone at the county and how those meetings are going to go? Are they going to be as raucous right. as they have been, or, what would be your guess there?
Well, my prediction on it was that we're going to see a lot less, sort of interpersonal, personality-rooted conflict.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to see a lot more kind of actual politicking.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that, especially looking at this Wheeler retirement thing and then the Steve Bradshaw, you know, the case of the maybe disappearing commissioner, you watch those two sort of ordeals play out in public and you really got a sense for kind of what some of the divisions are within the local party. And one of the consistent themes, I think, for both of those is that the Bonner County Republican Central Committee and, you know, by extension, its chairman, you know, Scott Herndon, kind of seem to have come out a little bit on the losing end of both of those issues, which suggests to me that the influence of the committee over the Board of Commissioners might be a little bit looser than it has been in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I know that, you know, Commissioner Korn was very clearly a loyalist for the Central Committee at that last meeting where they discussed Wheeler's retirement, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
But he was pretty well, you know, sidelined by Asia Williams and Steve Bradshaw, who almost never make common cause on anything. But those two were like, look, this is not what we should be doing. The Central Committee is wrong. The chairman has a wrong interpretation. There was a lot of sort of back and forth about who was getting advice from whom,
mm-hmm.
whether the prosecuting attorney Lewis Marshall was giving advice to Herndon that conflicted with what he had given to the board. So there was a lot of that sort of like real politique, I guess, within the party. And I don't know that Asia Williams and Ron Korn are going to get along so great. I mean, the past couple of meetings I've watched, you know, she's more than willing to kind of like, no, Ron, you're wrong. You're wrong, Korn. so they butted heads a little bit more than I might have expected.
Interesting.
And it'll be interesting to see when Brian Domke gets in there, because he, throughout the whole campaign process, struck me repeatedly as a really sort of even-keeled, soft-spoken, deliberative kind of guy. I don't know if that's really going to bear out, but compared to what we've seen over the past, you know, couple cycles here with, you know, characters like Dan McDonald and Steve Bradshaw and, you know, people who are really willing to kind of like get the fireworks out, I don't see Domke being that kind of guy. So maybe a more deliberative but more political board, I guess is what I would say, with some implications for the broader political ecosystem through the Central Committee.
Hmm.
Okay, Ben, you got a prediction you want to lay out there and put your neck on the line?
I don't know if I can say it on the radio, really. No, I think we're going to have a tough year ahead. I hate to be pessimistic, but I think that with a lot of the national politics going on with, you know, the tariff wars ahead and the coming class struggle, I think a lot of people are fatigued, and I think a lot of people are just angry right now, and it's manifesting itself over and over again. And I think the economy might take a little dip. I'm not an expert, but I've been watching, and we've been booming for many years now. The stock market has been on an upward trajectory, and you know, there were hiccups right before COVID, but COVID kind of solved that, you know, looming recession that people were talking about 4 or 5 years ago. And it's almost like when you don't get chicken pox when you're a kid, like, you know, you just got to get it sometimes and get it over with. And so if you have a healthy recession and a boom economy, I think that's good for the long term. But when you have events that are in the way of a, you know, a drawback or a recession, I feel like the next recession might be even worse. And so I think we're going to see some struggle ahead, and, you know, we'll be here to cover it.
How about you, Jack? A prediction for the year ahead, 2025. Your crystal ball, please.
I guess we already talked about the county, I think, but I do think things are going to continue to be dramatic there. I don't think things are going to quiet down because they haven't so far. You know, I've been paying attention to what goes on at the county, and I don't think I've seen a really quiet county commission since, I don't know, for a while. There's always something going on at the Bonner County Commission, and I think that'll continue. I think the is there a good prediction to make for West Bonner County, the school district? I don't know. I think we're going to see. I have no idea what's going to happen out there. My crystal ball is blank, other than to say that I think something has to change. Something's got to give in West Bonner County at the school district level. They have no, they do not have the funding to maintain a school district, but a school district exists. And I don't know if that means there's going to be state intervention or if there's, if they are going to finally be able to pass one of the levies that they keep proposing or what, but it seems like they've been teetering on the edge of a cliff now for long enough without much relief. And I think something's going to happen in West Bonner County in 2025. Mm-hmm. So there you go. There's a non-prediction prediction.
Okay. Well,
what do you say, Chris?
I'll throw out just a couple things here. One is that it's odd number of years, so we should have city elections coming up. Mm. And I don't know if the city elections will be tightly contested or not. And there'll probably be some council seats that come up for election this year in our local municipalities. But I kind of expect both Sandpoint and Pondere to take another whack at their 1% local sales taxes. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, to me, it just makes so much sense that tax burden can be shared outside of these municipalities. So it's just does not all fall on the residents, and especially for Pondere, there's a huge upside since so many people come there to shop at their big box stores.
Well, almost all their money goes to Boise.
Yeah, almost all that. I mean, they get a couple $100,000 back after they collect millions in sales tax. Yeah. So,
and that's a population issue. They just don't have that much population living there, so it's frustrating.
Yeah. They just funnel that money away from the city. So I think that might happen, and I'm going to make a bold prediction that we're going to have a good cultural year with our local art organizations. The Festival of Sandpoint is going to have a good year. The Panda and its Century Fund campaign are going to have good years. Pondere Arts Council, Music Conservatory will continue to flourish and provide our communities with great stuff. And Carousel Smiles is going to become one of those pillars now that they have a permanent home. And people have seen how neat the artistry going into that carousel is.
Mm-hmm. That is cool. Artistry is the word for it. The craft that goes into restoration.
Those ponies is amazing.
Yeah.
And all the little art features on the carousel itself.
Yeah.
If people haven't seen it, they should swing by that new home they have on at a church in Fifth there.
Well, indeed. Are they letting people pop in?
I think people can pop in, and they're turning it into the workshop right now to get the work done. So,
all right. Well,
we
here we go. There's a 2024, and there's a look ahead at 2025. Coming up in the reader, you got the 208 fiction contest, I notice. Continuing that.
Yeah, we're meeting tonight to read and judge the entries.
Right.
Okay. Got a couple dozen or so, probably. Yes.
We'll have till 5 p.m. today to send them, so.
208 words.
Exactly, 208 words.
Not counting the title or author name.
So how do you just run it through the word processor?
Yeah.
Count the words?
it's sometimes it's frustrating because, you know, they're one or two words off, and it's like, you know, this is the one requirement that, well, it has to be fiction too.
Do you ship it back to them and say, hey, you need to take a word out or add a word?
Yeah. Or we'll do some selective editing where we can take a word away.
If I can fix it without any change of anything, like real substantive change, I'll
that's what editors do.
Exactly. Yeah. Nobody even notices, right?
The best editor is the one that nobody notices.
Right.
That the writer itself doesn't notice.
That's my ultimate goal, is the writer has no idea that I edited it.
I would say, if you want to get people to read it, say one of these stories has 209 words. Find the one.
Smart. You'd be surprised. When we have letter to the editor restrictions, people, I let one in one time years ago that was, you know, 304 words or something, and somebody wrote and said, I counted every word. There was 304.
Way off.
It's like, wow, they're counting words.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, it's because you had cut them out at some point.
And I had to apologize. I said, you know what? You're right.
Yeah. You get four words in your next letter. Yeah.
Right. The title was 102 words long. or something.
An entire show could be dedicated to what people write and call us about at the newspaper, yeah. by the way.
Well, okay. It's 8:53, according to the computer clock here. I guess we'll play some music now. The Same Point Reader continues to be available on newsstands on Thursday morning almost all the time, unless there's a Christmas a Christmas week falls just wrong, and then you can't get it printed on Wednesday, I guess.
Yeah, it came out on Tuesday.
Yeah, we put the paper to bed in one day of work. That was a marathon that day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but probably worth it because it freed up your holiday week.
You had know? A week mm-hmm. off almost.
Yeah,
that's great. Nice.
I will mention that on next Wednesday's show, January 8th, the morning show, we are going to have interviews with our legislators. The legislative session kicks off on Monday. So we got them to tell us what they see coming. That's Mark Sauter and Jim Woodward. Cornell Razor didn't really get back except with he didn't have time for the interview, but he sent in some written comments I'll rattle off too.
Okay. It's been mentioned in the Reader, and I'll mention here that you're kicking off. I will for sure watch the State of the State address, and we'll be talking about that next Friday, I'm sure, what the governor says about his priorities for the upcoming year.
Yeah, that is, he's doing that on Monday.
Right.
Opening of the legislature, yeah.
The opening of the legislature is on Monday, and that's, and there we have it, starting another year. Okay. This is the time that I wish we had a really great sign-off. And there's the news. And there, you know, and that's...
And that's the way it is.
That's how
good morning and good luck.
Yeah. I like the... My favorite was Studs Terkel's sign-off, which is, until then, take it easy, but take it.
Right.
That's what I say.
Dan Rather. Courage.
Courage, yeah.
Courage.
Well, okay.
Walter Cronkite. That's the way it was.
That's the way it was.
Okay. For 2025, my New Year's resolution is to come up with a great one. You will know when the show is over because we will say something.
We'll work on those, Jack, every week until you finally polish it up.
Until I find the right one. Okay.
Well, my button, I think is the one.
Well, yeah. We better tell what the button says. It says, to heck with everybody.
Yes, it
except
does.
Not heck.
Yeah. Yeah, I wear it sometimes.
Okay. Yep. Going into music now. It's Otto's Eclectic Mix here on 88.5 KRFY for just a couple minutes. Bird Note at 9 a.m. Thanks for listening. Happy New Year. Thank you, Zach. Thank you, Ben. Thank you, Chris. And
courage.
Exactly. Thank you.